I'm Reggie.
And I'm Brian.
And this is R&B Talks.
R&B Talks, Talks. This is the He Graduated Summa Cum Laude edition. Everybody, I just want you to know that my friend Reggie here graduated with institutional honors. He is officially a mad scientist genius.
Yes, that is what that means, Brian.
It is. It's going to be on your certificate. It's going to say summa cum laude, mad scientist genius. That's what it's going to say.
Mad scientist genius, yeah.
Mad scientist genius. So, no.
In apologetics.
Let's congratulate Reggie on his accomplishment. Very, very distinguished. We're going to start calling him Professor Reginald. Professor Reginald, how are you feeling?
I'm good. This is a pipe to signify the occasion. My wife sent a, it was funny. I didn't know about it. She contacted one of the pipe makers I buy a lot of pipes from, small guy, Paul Menard, and said, "Hey, I want to get my, you know, I want to get Reggie something to commemorate not only his birthday, but his, you know, his achievement as, you know, getting his apologetics degree and all this stuff." So he made this especially for me. That's pretty cool. So it's pretty neat. I'm pretty stoked about having actually something like that to, you know, signify that, which is pretty cool.
I deem that the summa cum laude, mad scientist genius, Professor Reginald Pipe.
Okay.
I deem it that.
I want to say this, though, that I've completed my degree. Would I do it again? Yes. Is it for everyone? No. And I want to make this abundantly clear that you do not need a degree in theology or apologetics or whatever to fully be able to understand and teach and anything with theology or the gospel or whatever. It's not necessary.
Well, God bless you for saying that, sir, because there's so many people out there that constantly attempt to make an argument from authority, and it just wears me thin.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, did I like learn any new things while at Liberty University studying apologetics? No, not really. Did it give me some deeper perspectives and ways to do better research and more materials and different things? Yes, it did. Did it allow me to designate a lot of more time to the subject than I probably normally would have? Yes. But there's a lot of things, though, in that four-year a Bachelor of Science degree, though, that is not there that you should know if you're going to do anything with apologetics. So there's quite a bit of stuff that lies outside of the scope, like what the school teaches as part of the degree program, that's necessary. Now, they do this for a couple different reasons. One is because you have these basic standards that have to be met by any university in order to be considered
a mad scientist genius.
Credible or whatever they call it. Yes. But I mean, you know, it has to fit with a wide range of people. So there you go. So that's my spiel about that. It was a very awesome. I really enjoyed in academia, even at the undergraduate. I really felt it was very easy. I was not really challenged, for any of the assignments or whatever. I did challenge some of the professors on some things. I did not shy away from that.
Okay. So I have to say this now, guys, you got to know that I've known Reggie for a very long time. And I will say something that a lot of people will say, well, that guy thinks he's right. He is. I think both of us are pretty much right in most of what we say, but here's the thing. Reggie will never admit to you how sharp he is. I will hear him say things from time to time, and I will have to stitch the back of my head back on because it's a mind blower. And it's never from a place of, well, let me tell you all of my knowledge. It's just, it comes out, and it's really coming out from perspective, right? It's not coming out from from a need to tell everybody that he's smart on this particular, you know, hyper point that he's trying to make. It's just, you know, he will, you'll never hear him say, I'm a mad scientist genius, but he is. And in many different ways, Reggie is a Renaissance man in a lot of senses, right? Like he's mentally, physically, he likes to chop up wood things and chop things down and carry things like, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Commando, which is still one of the greatest 80s action movies of all time. But I say that to say I don't think it's that he wasn't challenged. I think that he enjoys the experience so much that the challenge is almost secondary to enjoying the process. Cause we had many conversations about the things that you were going over in school, and I just could hear the joy in the way you talked about it, right? Like, you would get so deep into these projects and you would start talking to me, and honestly, I'd be lost. I'd be like, yes, the subtext of the quantum mechanics of the state. And I'm like, he's telling me these things that he's excited about. So don't let him be humble. He's just a mad scientist genius.
But I guess what I'm saying is like I am not alone here when I say that it would be, it's easy. And it was, I'm really like, dude, I would spend maybe 8 hours. I could write an entire research paper.
Did you know that's a whole work day, right?
Yeah, but it's not supposed to, like they give you these assignments way ahead of time so you can work on them. It's not supposed to take that. Now, hopefully, hopefully there's a lot more people that are doing as well as I am in school. I'm not saying that, but it is what it boils down to though is like, later on in my life, I'm well read already. Yeah. So I'm kind of already, I'm already attuned to this material anyway. I've been debating stuff already. You know what I'm saying? So like for me, it's like trying to, I'm just getting a degree because God told me to.
Which here's the thing too. Reggie is a fantastic arguer and debater. I'm hoping that soon we'll have guests so we can have open debates and, you know, civil discourse about agreeable and non-agreeable subjects. But anyway, this is just all to say,
yeah, but I'm just getting done with, I'm not done. I will continue to debate things, but I guess I get more emboldened and more emboldened over time, not less. Now I'm choosing not to voice as much on social media because I think it's foul and like you never get anywhere.
You know, though, here's what I think about social media. I think it's okay to challenge someone anywhere as long as you're not attempting to degrade them in some way. So if you're going to post something on social media, as long as it's not an intentional attempt to degrade somebody or make somebody look bad, I don't think there's anything wrong with engaging them on some, I mean, and I'll be honest with you, and I'll say this, and I might get some blowback on this. About 90% of what I read posted on social media is stupid. It ranges from what I ate for breakfast. You know, I'll go over some of the things that I've seen. This is actually what it was called. There was this post called "As an Overweight Girl, What I Eat." And literally it was a chronological day to day. She had like 30 posts of her eating and honestly, it was just hot garbage, but she was eating it. And it's all it was. It wasn't a big women are beautiful thing or anything like that. It was, here's the crap I eat. Right. And there wasn't any commentary that went along with it other than Cheetos, you know, like nothing relevant.
And I know. And I'm not saying that. Like, I actually don't mind the stuff that's like just silly. I think that's actually more appropriate than people trying to be serious on social media. But what I'm saying is like, I just don't feel like this is going to sound really conceited. I just always feel like there's no point. I'm so far ahead of person X they'll never, this is pointless, right? And that's where I feel like, you know, now, and that's really a perspective from an ego. And I recognize that I'm not, and this is what I'm saying. Like, I understand where that is, and I don't like that. And I don't feel that way though, when I get in discussions in person, right? So it's like the communication medium there isn't allowing for true, like really the whole scope of that conversation to really resonate. So for me, it ends up with this is dumb. Why am I, you know, that's really where I'm
at.
Fair
enough. And a lot of people, and I mean, I'll be honest with you, I rarely engage. It has to be something so just ridiculously inflammatory and factually just so far under the dirt line that I have to, that I'm like, I just can't not say something, you know? But you know, I'm not a keyboard warrior either. Like, I don't have and I think that's where social media falls short for me, is this need to, I want to say what I feel, but I'm not strong enough of an individual to say it to actual people. And I'm not capable of posting my argument in a way that's going to be relevant or even true. So I'm going to type this ridiculous statement into Facebook because I can type it in and post it and then never look at it again. And I got to say my piece, right? But yeah, I think you're right.
Well, let me be specific for a minute, especially about political stuff. I think the Democrat Party's agenda is evil. Let me just be really, really straight here. I think it's evil. I think promoting the murder of children, the mutilation of children, the Marxist and socialistic agendas and stuff, it leads to death. Yeah. And that is evil to me, right? So I feel very powerfully bold about that. Okay. And there's a lot of people I know that are close to me or whatever that have this, that do that. And so if I see something, then I am going to feel the necessity to respond on social media, which is going to come across as very direct, because that's how I am anyway. I don't change.
That is very true.
I don't change who I am in social media versus if I'm standing right in front of you. It's going to be very direct, very substantial, not just a feeling or an emotive or something stupid. And all I'm going to get back is drivel and no substance. And it never ends this way. Okay. So what I'll say is though, is that just know that people, if you choose to do back evil, then you're supporting evil, in my opinion. And that's not going to come out in a discussion well on social media. That is because of my bold, passionate opinions, it doesn't come across on social media the right way. Either way is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not going to be interpreted really well because it's going to be sharp and it's going to be really right
and
at it.
It is. It's going to be sharp.
And then you know, it's, they're not, I don't know.
There's been a few posts I've seen Reggie throw up that even I went, oh, oh. But I mean, it's like this I'm with her thing that everybody's putting on their Facebook page. Look, I get it. You want to be a part of something, so you pick this nonsensical thing to rally behind, which is a person who can't really talk that well. Apparently, her first day in office starts in November or January of next year, although she's been in office for 4 years. You know, and this is something else that I really, you know, people, you know, everybody likes to blame Donald Trump and blame MAGA Republicans and blame conservatives and blame Christians. Do people realize that 12 out of the last 16 years, the Democratic Party's been in charge? And we are steadily spiraling to being a bankrupt economy and country.
Yeah, but okay, let me,
because of Democratic leadership.
Let me just say that it does not matter about party anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't. There is no party anymore.
No,
it's you're picking a side. It's like a war.
You got an establishment and you don't. Mm-hmm. That's really it. So you, because you have Republicans and Democrats on both sides, that'll just be bought off by all this stuff. Until you have government officials who are actually doing things for the benefit of the people, then you won't have a government that does anything otherwise.
Nick Freitas for president.
Well, yeah, Nick's, I love his Nick stuff. Freitas, man. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't really matter if it's Republican or Democrat right now, because at the, you have all these large corporate interests and contracts and stuff at this stupid government level that are, impact everything that goes on. So until you get that stuff out of the way, we will not have a government for the people. It doesn't really matter who's president or not. Now, it doesn't matter who's president, but I'm saying as far as what that goes, that's what that's so. Well, I guess politics is where I'm just it's such a circus. I would have already run for office at some point had I thought that it was anything but a circus, but it's not. Now, I do think that, and this is why I lean so hard into the Christian faith and the truth of the biblical text and the reality of the gospel, is that has real definitive and absolute consequences that are not just applying to what the election is coming up, but for the rest of your life and eternity thereafter.
Well, and let's be clear too. I'm a cynic by nature, right? Like, I'm a very cynical person by nature. Like, I don't really, you know this firsthand. It takes a whole lot to gain my trust and make me have any faith in you as an individual or as an entity in general, right? Because I've lived a life where most what we would call American dream style entities and individuals have failed me. So I don't really, you know, we're fighting for a democracy that's not a democracy. We've never been a democracy. We're not a democratic society. We're a republic. Our vote really, if you get down to the brass tacks of it, doesn't always count, because the Electoral College can, the members of the Electoral College can vote against their people, right? So I have zero problem with an electoral process. I have zero problem with a political process. But our government is no longer a government. It's a corporation. It's 100% a corporation. And the reason why a guy like Trump, I've been a big advocate of somebody like Warren Buffett or Elon Musk running for president. The reason why I say that is you can't run our government like a government anymore, because it's so far from what a government is supposed to be that I don't even really consider it a government anymore. It's a business. It's a checks and balance sheets, right? $30 trillion in debt. What most Americans don't realize is that debt is to us. Treasury bonds are worthless. You think that you're sending your Social Security money into some imaginary savings account? No, it's spent before it gets there.
Yeah,
we're paying for their Social Security and hoping that there will be enough people left when we get to that age that they can pay for our Social Security. There is no savings account.
Right? Yeah, the trillions of dollars in debt is definitely not what people don't think is there. That's not owed to
China or Mexico. Well,
but we have a debt too.
We do have debt, but that's like 10% of the debt.
I forgot what the percentage is, but it's the vast majority of it is owed
to the American people.
The American people and entities inside the government right?
And this is where I'm going to get them. And this is why you should all, every one of you out there that is listening to this, should be pissed off. Not because Kamala's not president or Trump's not president. Our government is running a Ponzi scheme.
It is.
It's running a Ponzi scheme. Any other, if a business actually did what our federal government is doing with our tax dollars, they would be in prison. Yet because they are a quote unquote government, they are allowed to do whatever they want. I digress. You don't want to get me going down that road. I have 1,000 things we could talk about, so we're not going to go down that road. But anyway, we would be remiss if we did not mention, and I would like to say, I have a huge emotional burden on me after finding out that another child armed himself and took the lives of 4 people and injured 9. We fail as a society. We failed that child. the child is are obviously troubled enough to want to take a loaded rifle weapon and take the lives of people in order to deal with whatever trauma or stress he's going through. But I also want to say, and here we go again with gun control. Nobody's talking about the fact that this kid's probably got some serious mental health issues. Nobody's addressing it. It's all about on the conservative side, it's about no, it's not gun control. On the Democratic side or the liberal side, it's we'll take away the guns. And nobody is having the conversation. How did we fail this child?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really about, well, what where's his dad? Where's his mom? How's his home life? What was your relationship to school? How did that happen?
Where did the process break? Where the adults that should have cared about him and were around him weren't there enough to realize where he was going. I can tell you right now, and I have a 16-year-old boy and I have a 13-year-old boy, and they are completely different personalities, but I can feel in their presence when something is off.
Yeah, that's an absent parent, dude. Whatever. I don't even know. Cause I was talking to you, Brian, earlier. I didn't really even get a chance. I saw like a little bit about it, but I was focused on other things. And I'll just say this, that what little bit I know that I just don't fathom why
it's just heartbreaking.
Someone would be able, I don't care who, some random person could walk into a school anyway, much less armed. Yeah. Okay. So let me just say that that's a gross incompetency by this, whatever school this is. Huge. There's no way. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons why we don't take our kids to public school is because of this fact.
Dude, here's the thing. He walked in with a long gun.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
He didn't have a pistol stuffed in a sack inside a backpack. He walked into a school with a loaded long gun. Now, let me be clear. I own one of the very same styles of guns that this young man took lives with. And I can tell you this, it ain't the gun's fault. Guns don't kill people.
Tell us about the FBI though here, Brian.
Well, here's another thing. All right. Okay. So this made me angry. So angry. In fact, I had to take a minute after I saw it. A year ago, the FBI investigated this young man.
Because he did what?
Because he threatened to shoot up a middle school.
Hmm.
And their conclusion was there was no danger. Now, let me be clear. All right. Reggie, I've known you a long time. But if I saw you post that you were going to go shoot up a department store or the Axe store, wherever you hang out all the time, there's something wrong.
Yeah. I've gone over the deep end.
There needs to be intervention.
There's been a break.
I don't care if you don't find a map or a plan. I don't care if you speak those words and you do it in a public forum. It's no longer, well, we'll see if there's a problem. Damn it, there's a problem.
Okay. My only argument against this, though, is that I don't think that having any kind of repercussions around that whole threat thing. And really, I don't think that would have done anything, to be fair. And I think there's a lot of false flags there because people are kind of messed up. I think it really boils down to that crazy is going to happen.
Yeah. But for them to go and to his home and go to a child that they know for a fact made this threat because they traced it back through the IP address. They knew. And at the end of the investigation go, we're good.
Well, but that's what I mean. It's probably
no, hey, you need to send this kid to counseling. Hey, we need to get this kid in the program. Hey, there's obviously an issue here. We need to hold the parents responsible for making sure that this child gets help. And I'm not talking about sending them to your school counselor, which most school counselors, and I'm not knocking all school counselors. My son's got one. That's a great lady, really is. But most of these schools have gone woke and you're not going to get the type of counseling that someone who's suffering from severe mental health issues is going to need.
I mean, look, the solution's probably it's not just the one thing here to have stuff like this. It's really not. But the ideal though that parents aren't They don't have an idea like what the security is like at their schools that they send their kids to is really irresponsible.
And what really bothers me is the buzzards at Fox News and MSNBC and CNN. None of them are talking about, oh man, this kid was troubled and we need to figure out why this happened. It's all about guns.
I know.
The whole conversation is about guns. Shut up.
No, like, do people not realize that it wasn't that long ago before kids were going to high school with their hunting rifles in the back window of their trucks?
Yep.
And like, it was there all damn day.
And there were a lot less.
And that we didn't have, yeah, point. because we've taken discipline out of the equation. We've taken and gone so far into this, let's do what makes you happy nonsense, that it's gone way too far, that we've gone way off the deep end with this stuff.
We
empower bullies anymore. This whole anti-bully crap doesn't work.
Yeah.
It does not work. You end up protecting them.
We don't want to hurt the bully like the kid that he's hurting. You need to take your foot and plant it firmly in the bully's behind. I remember back when I was in school, if you were being bullied, the bully got handled. Kids that picked on other kids weren't tolerated most of the time.
But you're never going to get rid of crazy. Okay, there's always going to be some nut job out there. What you can do is you can take measures to at least guard the building.
Yes.
The ground you're on.
And it's not like there's not a history of these things happening over the last 10 years that you should go, well, man, this came out of the blue. Dude, every time we turn it on, somebody's shooting up a school. Somebody's shooting up something else. Are you blind? Do you honestly think that with the epic amount of exposure that kids have nowadays to the awful stuff that they can look up on the internet and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all the other garbage, do you honestly believe that you're immune?
Yeah. Well, and to look, you, it's not, the weapon can be all kinds of things. It can be all kinds of things. We're in 2024, people. Like, you can go and find all kinds of different ways and recipes and everything else to do all kinds of things that are not using a firearm. There's like, wow, kind of things that you can do. You can get this
high level freaked out kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't just some era where you have to go to the library to endow your Dewey Decibel system in order to find out all this. No, it's like all out there.
Dude, I was in a used bookstore a while back and on the shelf was a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook. There's about 30 different ways to blow something up.
I'm just saying, like, you got to understand that if there's not a firearm involved, there's going to be something else involved. You're not solving the problem by removing a weapon. You're just putting another weapon in place.
Look, I've always said this. All right. So the big argument behind gun control is we can stop violence,
which is BS,
which is total garbage. So next, are you going to take away knives? Then what? Hammers?
It didn't work for the UK.
Screwdrivers.
People don't understand. They like the statistics behind this stuff get all, it's on purpose. It gets all propaganda driven statistic. Yes. And they hide everything in the small print. Violent crime. If you actually define that the same way as like we would here in the US, has gone way up.
Yeah.
In places like the UK and Australia and stuff. Knife attacks, all this other stuff has gone way up. Acid attacks, all that nonsense.
Yeah.
So no, it hasn't done anything. It has not solved the problem.
I mean, look at like you were talking about Afghanistan. Well, they can't afford weapons. They build dirty bombs. They put nails and pieces of metal and shrapnel in milk jugs and fill them with explosive chemicals. You don't have to have a gun to kill people.
No.
And the unfortunate thing is, we see, and I say this, most liberals seem to be under the delusion that if you take away guns, somehow magically people are going to stop dying because other people kill them. No.
You know, the thing is, I think people really just don't want it. It's kind of this this nasty thing in the corner that people don't want to acknowledge and respond to.
Everybody needs a devil.
Well,
that they can recognize this, and chase.
This goes back to, though, that it's like when you talk about men need to be dangerous in order to be
men.
Men. Well, why is that? Well, because there are dangers out there that you need to be dangerous for.
Well, here's what I say. Better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war.
Exactly. But I'm saying,
right?
Like, you know, the whole thing that is come up is like, how, you know, you it doesn't, we're not in the Wild West, but even then it wasn't as bad as what people think it was, for one. Second, like you're, there's still always going to be a threat that we have to deal with. We do not live in a world that does not have dangers in it.
Yeah. That's not a real thing.
I mean,
that's a total falsehood.
It is. So that's part of life. But anyway, you want to pick up your lighter?
I'm good, man. You totally dropped your lighter. I'll get in a second. I got to stop, man. I'm fired up, man.
Okay, but if you're fired up, but here's let me say this. Would you classify a school shooting as evil?
Yes.
Objectively or subjectively?
Subjectively.
And objectively,
I mentioned. There's no just evil across the board.
There's no good that comes. I mean, well, that's not classified as good by any standard.
By any standard. Now, let's be clear. Do I believe that a 14-year-old child, without outside oppressive influences, on their own, would decide to go shoot up a school? No.
Okay. Well. Okay. I'll get back to my point in a minute. Do you believe he should be tried as an adult? 14 now.
Golly, man, that's
14.
If they, and I'll say this, and this is controversial too, if they find that it was a cohesive and premeditated plan, yes.
I'm going to disagree.
If they find that he was mentally unstable and this was a psychotic break, or some level of mental collapse? No.
Here's why I'm going to say no to it. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
He's 14. He is not an adult. There's no way this kid has matured enough to even really fully understand the repercussions and everything of what he's doing. I can
understand what you're saying.
And everything else like that. Now, what I don't have a solution, because I don't believe in the prison system as really an answer either. I just don't jive with that.
Well, that's because honestly, I can say that our prison system within itself is not a deterrent. And the reason for that is our prison system has become a way to institutionalize people and make them dependent. I know and had a relative that spent some time in prison and he was institutionalized. Like, he slept on a thin mattress on the floor. He slept facing the door. He was in and out of jail. Even after he was released from prison, he was in and out of jail multiple times because you become institutionalized.
Yeah.
You become inert and dependent on that system, even though it's quote unquote oppressive. They tell you when to eat. They tell you when to sleep. You have no responsibility. Like prison, when they put you, go back to Alcatraz, they put you in an 8x8 box. You had zero freedoms. You didn't get to walk around for an hour or two a day and play basketball. And, you know, you were in prison. So the recidivism rate wasn't as high then. But think about it now. Prisoners now have rights. Well, you can't not give them cable television and weight rooms and basketball courts. Bullshit talking. You can't. You absolutely, you're in prison, dude. You're in prison. If it was a prisonable offense, then it's prison. You gave away your rights when you did something that was a prisonable offense. But anyway, there's a reason you asked me that question. Would you like to tell me the reason, Reggie?
That would mean that evil exists at an absolute level.
Absolutely. For sure.
Would that also indicate that there is good?
Now, let me get some clarity on the question. Are you asking me that if
if there's evil, does that also, does that have, does that mean there has to be good?
Yes.
Absolutely means that.
Absolutely means
you that. You can't have evil without good. You can't have, you really, you can have good without evil though. That's a strange thing to kind of wrap your mind around.
It's a strange dynamic.
It's kind of the same thing. Like you can't, like a shadow doesn't exist without the sun, but the sun can exist without a shadow.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So today's episode is kind of all about a response to Stephen Fry on God.
Yeah.
Now, I this was a long time ago. This was an interview.
Yeah, this was quite a while back.
That happened in 2015. But I ran across it again on the Daily Dose of Wisdom channel, who just had a thing about it. But that was John Lennox on that one. Mm-hmm. But really, I'm not going to use that too much here because I really want to focus on some other things about this. So let me read this. A little quote from Stephen Fry.
Yes.
Bone cancer in children? What's that about? How dare you? How dare you create a world with such misery that it is not our fault? That's Stephen Fry, if he were to actually meet God when he died, and when that's part of what he was saying. He also goes on to say, why should I respect a capricious, mean-minded, stupid God who creates a world is so full of injustice and pain? And then he goes on to say he would rather it be the 12 Greek gods, as at least they wouldn't pretend not to be human in their appetites. I don't even, okay. If there is a God who created the universe, he is a maniac. He's utterly monstrous and deserves no respect whatsoever.
Yes, it was a very strong response.
Now, that is very similar to Richard Dawkins' point in God Delusion. If you haven't read that, it's a very stupid read. But it's an atheistic manifesto. So, you know, hey, if you want to know what they think, read that.
Well, here's the thing about Dawkins.
Who's a cultural Christian, by the way.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean he's a Christian. It just means he values the ideals of Christianity.
Yeah, he values the more of Christianity. He doesn't value the deity of Christianity. Dawkins was an atheist, but let's be clear, I don't really believe in atheism. And the reason I don't believe in atheism is most atheists say, I don't believe in anything. Wrong. You have a belief that there is nothing to believe in. Therefore, you believe in something. So this dummy argument they make where, well, we don't believe in anything. Wrong. You do believe in things. When you get up in the morning, do you believe that you're going to go to work? Well, sure you do. When you go to work, do you believe you're going to get your job done and get to go home? Sure you do. So you have faith that things are going to happen. You have beliefs that things are going to happen.
When you look at a chair before you sit down in it, you have belief and faith. I would say faith in the chair that it will hold you up.
That's right.
You sit down on it.
That's absolutely right.
And that's based on evidence. Like you're looking at it, you're going, well, it looks like it's made, built. The joints look secure.
Absolutely.
There's basis for that belief and faith in something or other. Yeah. Everybody has it. That's not that unequivocally right. Okay. There's a lot here to, I've dug around. Let me just say this a little bit. This is not really an argument for intelligent design or if there is a God or whatever, although it does come into play with that quite often in a debate between secular and Christian things. But evil is one of those things you get thrown out all the time. Well, the evil exists, so therefore God, if he does exist, must be evil as well. So let's go on here, Brian, to the I watched the Vodi Bakum kind of subject on this.
So you're hitting home here, because one of my favorite things I've ever heard my man Vodi say was he was giving a sermon, and the sermon was about why does God allow evil to happen, right? And he said something, it shocked me at first, But then it was true. He goes, what's wrong with the world? And when everybody in the crowd looked at him, he went, us. You're what's wrong with the world. You. Me too. It's funny because he goes, me too. Not maybe not as much, but me too. But look, God wants from us love, but he doesn't want from us to be automatons and just, I mean, the biggest argument for why he wouldn't do that is when the battle happened in heaven and a third of the angels turned against God. These were people that were built to worship and put in place to worship him. And I think that when God created us, it was, all right, so freedom of choice, right? I want them to choose me, right? But everything that we do in the world, everything the world creates is despite, in the face of, and to spite God, right? So instead of, you know, there's a very interesting thing I watched the other day, and it was very interesting. There was an individual talking about Yahweh, the spelling of Yahweh, YHWH. Mm-hmm. And he goes, take a breath. He says, our breath, we breathe his name with our breath, right? So we were built in his image, but we were given the choice whether to love him or not.
One of the other quotes, I don't know if I have it here or not, but was God looks at us this way. Either we say, thy will be done, pointing to God, or God tells us, thy will be done, and lets us do what we're going to do. And well, he gives us the choice to do that, right?
You know, it's like, you know, you pray to God for patience. God tells you, I'm not going to give you patience. I'm going to give you opportunities to be patient, right? So when we become impatient, we're choosing against it. You know, God, you know, give me all the happiness that I want. No, I created you. It's up to you to be happy, right? We have choices to make, right? And I'll be honest, in this current society, when you're bombarded daily by all the negativity, it's hard sometimes to be happy in that way.
I'll pull this back to what Stephen Fry said. The one thing that caught me off guard the very first time I heard this was his response of like, how dare you? And he's saying that to the God. Now, I think that comes from a very ego. That's like a so ego type of place to come to from. Because assuming that if you died and you were in front of the God who created the entire universe, including mm-hmm. you, and everything in it and the systems around it and everything else and he's standing in front of you.
And he's standing in front of the gate that he promised you behind it was eternal life. And
you're going to say, how dare you?
Yeah.
Like, you're just an idiot at that point. Yeah. I mean, because then the reality has to come home. I was wrong about so many things.
But I can honestly say if any of us who claim to be atheists or Buddhist or whatever you are, if you died and boom, you're standing in front of the Almighty God,
you're going to assume it's an illusion.
I don't think so. I think the intensity of the moment is going to bring you around to reality, right?
Well, you would,
one of two realities.
I would say so, but
I believed in you. I followed you. I wasn't perfect, but I'm here because of your promise. Or B, oh crap. Well, I lived my life against you every day.
If
I spat in the face of what you created,
the reality
you're about to judge me.
Well, there's a lot of last words of people who didn't believe, and they're scary.
Yeah,
and some of the stuff that actually they said when they were dying.
Yeah,
like send chills down your spine. Just look it up if you want to. Famous atheist last words or something like that, but it's not good. I'll tell you that right now. But let me just say this. I coming from a place where I did rebel against the faith a little bit in my 20s and late teens, and went around and looked at different things and kind of believed in different things and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it is a place of the ego where you think Christians are stupid, and why would they need the like a religious thing in order to make them feel good or whatever. But it comes from a very nihilistic kind of like a very arrogant perspective, very self-centered perspective, right?
Yeah.
And it's believing that you should have control, should be in control, all this stuff. But it's really short-sighted.
But isn't the point that we are? Like, I control whether I follow God or not.
You do.
I make the choice, right? Like, yeah. This whole illusion, this is one of the things that gets me. You asked a question in the notes, and it's kind of, you know, ricocheted, yep. You know, racquetballed around in my head, and that's, does evil have a purpose?
Yes.
For a Christian and a non-Christian, yes. But for a Christian, evil, when you do something against God, it's supposed to draw you closer to Him in the act of asking for forgiveness and acknowledging your sin and knowing that you've done something wrong, right? But for this whole lie that's been sold, you know, for years and years and years from people is, well, you're a slave to religion. Actually, I'm not.
Well, to religion?
Well, or you're a slave to God. No, actually, I'm not, because God gives me the choice. God says, I want you to love me, but you don't have to.
Well, I think biblically, if you look at the closest thing that is real, is Paul's mentions he's a bondservant.
Yeah.
Which is not the same thing as a slave.
Yes.
It's very much different. And that's what he kind of calls himself, as a bondservant to Christ.
Absolutely.
And that very much is what I hope to be. And that we all should hope to be, if we're Christians, really, is a bondservant. It doesn't mean that you're this puppet, or, you know, you have no choices and everything. It means you're choosing to just really ideologically fall right in line with what Christ taught.
Yeah.
To get back on this about the purpose of evil, though, that's really at the cusp of what this whole thing is. It's like, you look at evil as this, and really there's no answer from the atheistic perspective of, like, of justice or injustice, because they'll say God is injustice God is unjust, but then that also means that there is justice. So how would you explain, if you go through your entire life, you've done horrible things, you've never been caught, you know, all the, because that happens.
Yeah.
You've never been caught. There's no been repercussions. You die. Well, where's the justice in that? How do you explain how justice is served in that scenario? And it's not. There's nothing.
Without God, there's no explanation.
Without God, there's no justice.
The explanation of justice in that is that you're going to hell.
Well, the reality of it.
Unfortunately, that's the justice of it. If a person goes through their entire life, rejects God, commits evil acts, and dies, you're going to be judged and you're going to be sent where the damned go, right? And I was talking about this the other day. I said something about hell in a conversation, and the guy's like, well, that's harsh. It is, but it's meant to be that way. It's meant to be that way to deter you from going down that path.
Right? Look, hell is not the same thing that's depicted a lot.
Yeah.
That's not really the pictures that we really get. Now, I don't really know what it is. We speculate all the time, but that's not.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of things.
Yeah. So along that same sermon of Bodhi Bakum, though, what was interesting to me was when he gets asked this question quite often about, why do bad things happen to good people? If God is so powerful, why do bad things happen, kind of thing? And his response is, ask the question correctly. So from his perspective, yeah, he's like, hey, you're not asking the question correctly. And this is his way. How on earth can a holy and righteous God know what I did and thought and said yesterday and not kill me in my sleep last night?
That's right.
But I think this is really important, though. You're asking that question. When you ask that, you're speaking from a supremacy of man perspective. Like, man is supreme. But that's not the case. If there is a God, you are not supreme.
Yeah, you are not even secondary.
And you're not good. This is the thing. Like, you're not good.
Well, I think that deserves a moment of explanation.
It does.
In the sense of, okay, so we are born of evil, right? We are born with a sinful nature.
you don't have to teach a child to disobey.
Yeah. The reason that the Christ had to be sacrificed was because God cannot look upon evil. So when you accept the blood of Christ and accept him as your savior, you are covered in the blood of his son. So he sees his son when he looks at us. He doesn't see the evil that we are or that we will do, right? He sees us as a product of the sacrifice of his son. So,
well, Christ was a substitute.
Yeah.
He was rescued, ransomed, redeemed, and restored us.
Yes.
And we are sanctified, and we're also being sanctified throughout our lives. Yes. Once we believe in Christ and move forward. And yeah, because of Christ's sacrifice, because we're choosing to acknowledge that sacrifice and acknowledge that was true, that was God incarnate, who did no evil, who was sinless, who took he bore the entire breath of sin of humanity into himself that whole time he was on the cross.
Yeah.
That's what we acknowledge, that we give, that we release our authority over our, we say, no, we are not supreme. We give that up to you, Christ.
And I'll postulate this. And this is not to lessen the pain that Christ suffered being put upon the cross. But I believe when Christ called out to his father, "Why have you forsaken me?" I don't think it had anything to do with the hands, the nails in his hands and feet. I think he had the moment where he felt himself intake all of the evil, all of the sin, all of our brokenness. And I believe that bore him more pain than being nailed to that cross.
There's John MacArthur actually talks about that. It's a really interesting point. What he says, you know, if you notice in the biblical text, he's saying things on the cross, he's on the cross.
Yeah.
But then there's a few hours where there's nothing.
Yeah.
And that's really when God is, it's postulated that that's when God left, right? But MacArthur puts a different spin on it. He says that's when he was fully there. His full wrath, his full act of righteousness was on display, was in this time of like when there was no, that's when he was taking and boring the entire breath, the entirety of the sin was during that dark period of time when he said nothing, because he was in full wrath of God, because we are usurpers. Yes. We are.
Yes.
We are the usurpers, not him.
I think that's a very, for me, that's a very heavy thing to think about.
That
when he cried out, "Why have you forsaken me?" That's when God left. But before that, in those hours of silence, he was carrying the full weight, the weight of all the things that Paul had done, the weight of Judas, the weight of every person who had committed evil, committed sin. Think about, and look, man, people, even in the days of Christ, there were atrocities committed, and he carried and bore all of that on that cross. And I believe that probably brought him more pain as a man than any nail or any crown of thorns could have brought him. And don't get me wrong, and I say this a lot, and I talk to my sons about this before. You know, when you think your life is tough, Christ bore a 330-pound ashen oak cross after being beaten and brutalized for days. Flayed.
Well, not days. It was overnight.
Well, overnight. A full day. Then he was spat upon.
Mocked,
stoned, as he was crawling up the Hill of Skulls with that cross on his back. And then he laid prostrate as it was on the ground, and they drove spikes through his hands and feet. Tell me you're having a tough day now.
Okay, let me add to this, because what you're saying, and because I really think this bears further exposition. The Shroud of Turin. Okay, mm-hmm. It's been debated for a long time. They did these like testing and stuff back in the 80s, and it was like, oh no, it really dates back to this. But there is new evidence behind this that says what pieces they tested were actually from repairs they made after the fire.
Yeah.
Okay. What they've actually uncovered is like it does date back to first century, mm-hmm. to the time of Christ and everything else, and that they still can't reproduce that image. The image of Christ in that fabric had to be so many, like, it's beyond any kind of flash photography that exists today. Like, it's incredibly how much it was like stronger than a bolt of lightning that had to happen in order to get that image on the fabric too. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the wounds displayed in that shroud, it is consistent with the biblical text about what happened. It's got pretty much everything else. But the one thing that is very clear is that he really had, there was, you could probably count the amount of skin left on his torso and stuff rather than not. That's how flayed it was.
Yeah.
And so imagine that this is that cross that was 330 pounds or something thereabouts wasn't sanded smooth. It was rough mm-hmm. lumber.
Yep.
He's got that on his back, which has no skin on it. Yeah. It's on his shoulder that, you know, all that stuff. And he's carrying that all the way there and then put on it through with nails.
Yeah.
Now, if that's insurmountably horrific. Okay.
Most people would have died during the torture at the prison.
And they even say that the Romans were particularly riled up, and this is demonic actually. What really, if you study this, it was like Satan wanted to make sure they were sufficiently riled up. I mean, they were particularly aggressive.
They were particularly piquant about how they did it. For sure.
Well, in the Crown of Thorns, keep in mind, that wasn't part of the plan. No. That was just them having a good time.
That's them just torturing him for fun.
Yes. Right? And, I mean, so let's just be real here for a second. Now, that's kind of ahead of everything, really, because the getting into the evil stuff, though, we got to dig back into that a little bit. So if evil exists, right, and that means that good exists, and evil really can't exist without good, then there has to be some basis for evil and good. And there has to be an objective reality for those that exist beyond the human condition. If you study what Dawkins talks about as God delusion, he'll say there is no God, there is no good, there is no real evil. It's kind of like just subjective, and it's just, you know, blah, blah, blah. Societies and all that kind of stuff. We've evolved enough to have a civilization that equates to this and that level of things. But it neglects like really the human condition and part of that, because we've had societies that exist, that still exist, that do heinous things and call it good. So if you think about good and evil, what you think about it right now, there are societies that have said that's okay and that's good to do.
Yeah.
You cannot, there has to exist an objective morality that outside of the human condition, which is C.S. Lewis's whole thing. If you haven't read Mere Christianity, you absolutely need to as a Christian. It's a beautiful book that is the moral argument behind the good and evil in that C.S. Lewis presents is fascinating. You have to read it. So look, the only way if good can exist without evil, evil has to exist in order for there to be love, or in order for there to be like these good things that we have. And let's think about this too. A bigger point behind that, because I was going to go on a little bit, but a bigger point behind all this, we tend to look at this in a very short-sighted manner. So in other words, when we call something evil, like we'll say a natural disaster, because there aren't like, you know, calamities and everything else. We say, oh, that's the evil of a tsunami or whatever. We only define that evil because we see the very short repercussions right after that and mm-hmm. what it actually did at the time. We are not God, though. we exist in a finite amount of time, and we can't see into the future. We can't see the ripples of things. God does, though. He's already seen how he turns this evil into something good later on. Everything has ripples that happen. We talked about the connectedness between everything. That connectedness doesn't just stop at the end of our life cycle.
Yeah.
The ripples we create go on throughout time of things we do.
Yes.
So when God says, when there's all these things happen or there's evil or whatever, God's not looking at just this event right here. He's looking at tomorrow. He's looking at next week, next month, 10 years, 1,000 years ahead of time in some cases. Now, where do we see that? And I think we see that in the story of what's his name? Joseph? Was that who's sold into slavery and then he comes back and all this stuff? Yeah, I can't remember.
I want to say yes, but I'm only like 78% sure.
Yeah, well, anyway, okay. there's a story in the Bible where his brothers sell him into slavery. He goes and does this, and it's like that right there is a very evil thing.
Yeah.
Right? We would say, oh, yeah, selling your brother into slavery, that's pretty bad. It's
terrible.
Yes. But he ends up coming that serves a good purpose, and you see the ripples in the story because it ends up saving people at the end of it, right? Yes. There's a story that Frank Turek talks about in the one link I'm going to put down there. Now, Frank Turek's I actually look very much up to this guy. You got to understand, he wrote the book "I Have Too Much Faith to Be an Atheist," which is one of the key books that pulled me back into the fold when I was searching for things. And so when he talks about this one thing where there was an atheist in the crowd talking about things, and one of the guys sitting next to this atheist said, has this whole story about his mother was raped, and it just, it like really destroyed her, but she couldn't blame she didn't want to pass on the sin of the father. So she went ahead and had the kid, and it was this guy. Yeah. This guy went on to be a preacher and everything else. And so you can't see, there's a ripple that happened, and there was a good thing that come out of that rather than that. And that's what happens. Like, evil exposes the righteousness and the goodness of God that we wouldn't normally be able to see. Without us being able to experience some of the bad stuff, we wouldn't know the good stuff. That's really key to this.
I mean, for me, going through what I went through as a kid, you know, going through the hardships and times, same as you, these are the things that make me look at what I have now and go, man, how good do I have it? Right? How good is my life? And I know I can be a negative person at times, but at the end of the day, I look up and go, man, where would I be if God hadn't blessed me with these things? If God wouldn't have, you know, where would I be if he would have never showed me the opposite of what I saw as I was growing up, right? And he brought all these wonderful people into my life. And that was purposeful, right? Like, by all rights and means, one day we can do testimonies if you like. I don't care. By all rights and means, I should be dead at this point. But he saved me and brought me out of the things that I was in to bring me to the things that he had planned for me, right? And I see it crystal clear, right? I see it crystal. Now, do I understand it? Well, no, but I'm also not God.
No,
I don't. Yeah. I'm not omnipotent. I can't see past, present, future. I don't. I do have this thought in my head that one day, maybe when I'm in heaven, God and I'll, you know, go get a root beer and he might explain some things to me. Probably not, but I clearly understand that there was a plan, and looking at how my life rolled out and where the highs and lows were, I clearly understand that the evil had to happen for me to understand the good that was coming. Right.
Yeah.
So it goes hand in hand.
You know, one of the, you know, when my mother died in a car wreck when I was 18 years old, she's the cornerstone of the whole family. I mean, really, that was the most heinous evil thing I could think of at the moment. And it wrecked our whole world. Me and my brothers, it did, tore it down. But if that would not have happened, my life had a drastic change in trajectory from that point on.
Yeah.
Now, it was not easy.
No.
It definitely had some, like, I had to go through a lot of stuff and a lot of, like, maturity and a lot of things that had to happen that even it didn't even work out really. I mean, it's still having a repercussion today about where I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done so many things along the way that's really stupid, but learn from it. And then I'm here today because of that one incident.
Song of Solomon, bro. Song of Solomon.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, because the thing is, it's short-sighted to say that evil exists and that disproves God, because it's actually the other way around.
Now, also, let's be clear that as Christians, you and I are both very aware that just because we commit an act of sin and God forgives us doesn't mean that there's not consequence.
Right. Well, yeah. Right.
I mean, there's so many examples in the Bible of someone sinning and then turning to God for forgiveness, but still having to pay the price, that earthly price for that sin. Right. It doesn't go away. So you must understand. And this is, again, I go back to the whole, you're a slave to God. No. God is not this omniscient, omnipotent, everything's okay, and when you forgive your sins, we're just going to dissipate. No, when you screw up, there are definite repercussions that come behind it. Because God forgives you doesn't mean that other people will. So,
right. Well, let me really throw something here, because this is something that I've always thought was fascinating.
Uh-oh, I love these.
When God, so keep in mind, this is when God expelled Lucifer from heaven. This was pre-universe.
Yeah.
Pre-creation.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what you can assume from everything that's in the text, right?
Where did he
expel him to? It says the abyss, right? Nothing.
He tosses him into the nothing, yeah, essentially.
Where did he create the universe?
From nothing.
In the nothing.
In the nothing.
In the abyss.
Yeah.
God expelled Lucifer into what would be the universe, our world that we live in today.
That's a pretty heavy. See what I mean when I said he comes out with some heavy stuff? That's some heavy stuff right there. That's some heavy stuff.
Let me say this before you say that, right? That is actually what he means by in 1 John 5:20, the whole world lies in the lap of their leader and their system, referring to supernatural evil.
Yeah.
Right. That's how you get this. That's just one verse, but I'm saying, but that's the clear line. The whole world lies in the lap of the demonic leader and its systems.
Sure does.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, it's like I tell people all the time, you know, the earth is the devil's playground, but we need to not forget who built the playground.
Well, evil exists. MacArthur says evil exists in a dominating way in this world.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't make sense if you were just talking about a finite existence with a subjective morality standard, with a justice system that only goes as far as you when you live and die, then it would truly be a heinous thing.
Yeah, it would.
Because the ripple effects don't matter if no justice is served after you die. The evil is not serves a good purpose if there's no ripple effects of all those things. If everything's just coincidence and happenstance, then nothing matters. There is no purpose to life. There is no morality standard. There is nothing that matters. It all burns up in heat death of the universe. That is what that means. If you just label this and say, well, it's just evil. So if evil exists, God's evil, then nothing matters. There's no point.
There's
nothing.
There's no point to follow God if God is a heinous and evil individual right? Okay, well, this beckons this question, Reggie. How would one describe Satan, the purveyor of evil?
See, that's the thing. Like, the vision, the physical, there's very limited descriptions, keep in mind, about Lucifer, Satan, as it is. But you can assume that he was a very high ranking in the angels, for one. There is a ranking system in the angels. We can get that from the text.
Yeah.
He was magnificent.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. I mean, to the point where it's not like if he's not a, the classical depiction of the horns and the tail and all that stuff.
Well, I think that's a Catholic representation.
It's a common one, right? Bifurcated
tail, yeah. Horns, pitchfork.
No, I mean, you talk about if he were to be like a human, he would be the most beautiful human you've ever seen.
Okay. Well, this is what I always tell people, you know, and I actually had this conversation. It was a long time ago. Satan is going to be that person that is sitting in front of you talking to you, and they're saying everything that you know is wrong, but are making you believe it's right. And let me tell you why I think that.
Because of Revelation 3.
Well, when you're an angel, right, you've seen the full glory of God, right? The full glory of heaven.
Revelation 12, I mean.
Right?
Yeah.
You've seen it. So this beautiful creation of God literally convinced a third of the angels that had seen, heard, and felt the unfettered glory of God to turn against him.
Revelation 12.
So if you think that you're too smart or you're too sly, he's already got you. Because that's what he wants. He wants you full of pride, full of ego, full of yourself, and he'll get you. He's already got a lot of people, right? Like, there's this thing that we're, you know, everybody's looking for the devil. And what I mean by the devil is the Catholic depiction of the devil, the Catholic depiction of Satan. And you can go back through the history of Catholic art and you can look at a lot of different, and they actually have a lot of different depictions. One of the Catholic depictions I saw was almost like a pan type creature, goat feet and, you know, long pointy chin and like hairy from the calf down and all that stuff. But he is going to be something so beautiful and so convincing that he's talked a third of the angels out of heaven. He's certainly going to be talking to you in a way that's going to make a whole lot of sense, even if you know what he's saying is wrong.
So what do you think the demons do? His you know, army of the fallen ones. What do you think?
I think it's influence. I think they deal in influence.
2 Corinthians 10, they devise the tombs of people.
Yeah. I think our current societal woes are a great depiction of what the demons do, because they deal in influence. They're influence peddlers, right? They're, you know, oh, well, you know, I know you say you don't want to do this, but if you do it, you know, you'll have what you want and you might feel bad, and it's an influence thing. I think it's that voice. People call it a conscience, you know, the angel and the demon on the shoulder. I actually think to some degree that's true.
Well, I think the people don't understand that spiritual warfare is going on all the time.
Absolutely.
That there's always a battle over your way. We're trying to be led astray from him at all possible times, at all, you know, as much as they can.
The way and the path to hell is wide, my friend.
So there's one point that in the mirage of stuff that I put in our study notes here, that there's a good point, that there's a point that's made by free will, because we have evil exists because we have free will and this kind of stuff. But John MacArthur actually gives a better, he goes further than that. And this is from all the stuff I'm saying about John, this is why does God allow so much suffering and evil? That was a sermon he did in 2008, but it was put up in the Legionnaire Ministries channel in 2015. But free will trumps evil is really what we're what we say here in that whole thing, right? But it's that's not really accurate. That's not true either. What he says was to design a God that has limited knowledge, power, who would rather have us do our will rather than do his will is to have a God that is not in the Bible. The biblical God is not, that's not what he sets out to do that says your will be done. That's not it. We say your will be done. It's not our will be done. It's still God's will that is to be done. So it's kind of, free will exists and there is a response to that. It, that is that part of evil, but that's not the purpose of evil. The existence of evil is in the end to the praise of his glory. Let me say that again. The existence of evil is to the end to praise of his glory. God is made infinitely more glorious because evil exists. We praise him for what he has done to overcome evil. Without him being able to display his righteousness overcoming evil, we would not have a clear depiction of who God is and what he does.
And there's another kind of growing argument out amongst non-Christians in, well, if God truly didn't want us to suffer, he wouldn't have created Satan. He wouldn't have created an evil being that can influence our lives. No, that's exactly what he would have done, because free will dictates that we have to have a countermeasure, right? Like if God said, you've got free will, Reggie, but I'm not really going to have anything evil or bad, so it's just going to be me. There's no countermeasure, right? There's nothing for that will to be tested against. And let me be clear, the purpose of evil is to test us. It's to test our faith. It's to test our determination. It's to test our relationship with God. It's to test our knowledge in him. So this thing of people saying, well, God wouldn't have created a devil. No, there had to be a countermeasure. There cannot, again, you cannot have good without evil. How would you ever know if you were actually good?
Well, you can't have good without evil, but we can't have good without evil. That's the point, right? So we humans, when do we really even actually make a change? What does it take for humans to actually make real substantial change? Strife, trials, tribulations, pain. Suffering, pain, all these things is when we finally say, oh, time to change.
Yeah.
It's not when everything's hunky-dory and we're doing well and everything. We don't change in that. We're fine. We don't feel that. And then let's not take away from what the New Testament is consistent about, suffering. Suffering leads to God. It's when you are at the freaking rock bottom, when you've been broken down and like just you are suffering. The definition of that is in your soul right now. You are done. That's when you're able to see God. That's when you need God. And that's when you realize he's there.
That's when he shows up.
Well, no, he's always been there. That's just when you're able to see him.
What I mean by showing up, I mean, he reveals himself to you in a way that he normally wouldn't have revealed himself.
Dude, anybody who doesn't believe that you need to go through something then.
Yeah.
I mean, you realize how, and here's the thing about this. It keeps getting worse. It keeps, whatever the case may be, it keeps getting worse. You hit this place and it's like, I admit, you're done. And then you have this encounter or you have this, it's something. And all of a sudden you're like, it completely changes everything in that very moment of your lowest point. And it's at that freaking moment that you're just, your eyes are open for the first time. And then from then on, that suffering is not a bad thing. Mm-mm. It's bad to a point. Even at the worst of it, though, it turns into a good thing.
Yeah.
and up you go, up you rise.
You become stronger.
Yes.
That's why, you know, one of the things I heard Vadi Bakum say was, a man who has never been tested is not a godly man.
Oh, yeah.
If you've never gone through a trial, if you've never lost something, if you've never felt pain, heartache, if you've never found your way to the bottom of something, and if you've never understood what strife and pain are, then how can you possibly understand what it means to be truly a godly man?
James 1:2, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Count in all joy when you fall into various trials. Romans 5:3-4 completely says there is glory in tribulation.
Mm-hmm.
Now these are people, this is what I don't, you really got to understand. This is Paul. He's in prison.
Okay. Well, it's funny that you say that because, John Barenthal has a podcast called The Real Ones. And on that podcast was Shia LaBeouf, who has gone down a spiritual road. But he says something in there, and he goes, all of those people that ridicule Christians, I'm paraphrasing, this isn't exactly how he said it, but he goes, all those people that ridicule Christians for trying to be perfect, he goes, they don't get it. He goes, all of the apostles were screw ups. He goes, they weren't perfect men. He goes, they were persecutors and liars and idolaters. And he goes, so all these people that think that Christ built his foundation, that brought in these apostles to help spread his word and start this movement. He goes, these were broken men. He goes, so this shield that people use that say, well, they were perfect. No. They weren't.
Matter of fact, during Jesus's teaching, they were not very believing people. They all the time doubted things. They were constant like this, right? And it's completely different than the disciples you see post Jesus' resurrection.
That's right.
It's one of the strongest evidences for the resurrection that these people had such a drastic change in who they were. Yeah. Instead, Stephen went out, was preaching the gospel in the city, was being stoned to death. Like, they threw him off a wall, and then they stoned him, like, when he was at the wall, and he was still preaching, still doing things, and then said, God forgive them for they know not what they do, and that kind of thing, before he died.
Yeah.
Now, you don't get that radical of a change unless something happens.
They doubted in the face, even when Christ told them that the time was nigh. They're coming for me. I'm going to go pray because it's time. And they doubted when the Son of God told them, the only perfect human being to ever live, told them, what they would do. You will deny me three times. One of you will turn against me. He told them, and they still were like,
nope, "No, I ain't gonna do it.
Ain't gonna do it."
Well, Peter was, man, especially Peter.
Yeah.
Oh no, I never doubt you.
Yeah, I never doubt you, Lord. I would never betray you, Lord. That's what he said. I would never betray you, Lord.
And he did.
And he did, just like it was told. Judas, just like it was told. You know, Judas wasn't selling Jesus. Jesus wasn't for sale. Judas was buying something for 30 pieces of gold, silver, right?
So that's the thing. But the whole point to this is that some virtues are only developed through evil.
Yep.
Through encountering evil, through trials,
persecution,
through tribulation, through persecution, through whatever the case may be. There are some virtues that cannot be earned or learned until you go through something.
Some badges of honor can't be achieved until you've lost or been broken.
Yes. And this is why this whole perspective is so important. If you have a short-term perspective, there isn't there isn't anything that's going to come. I mean, you know, because you're not looking at tomorrow. You're not looking at next year. A long-term, an eternal perspective, though, breeds about the ripples effect of the evil being turned into good.
Yeah.
And I think that that's reflected when 2 Corinthians 4:17-18, fix our eyes on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. We can't see the eternal. We can't wrap around mind around what eternal really is. Let's be real here. And then that's why we get in Romans 8 such a powerful thing that says God works all things for the good.
Yep.
Keep in mind, the temptation in the garden had to happen for Christ to be born, bore our sins, and for the salvation of all mankind.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's not like God steps back and says, yeah, it's evil. Oh, no, he takes full responsibility. He ordains it. He plans it.
Yeah.
Because it reveals the righteousness of God, because it produces good out of it. And he's the only one that can do that.
Agreed.
And that's what this whole thing is. Whenever you hear this argument about why does bad things happen to good people, it's because really they're not bad things. It's at this moment that it may be, you may feel horrible suffering, pain, whatever, but it's those ripples.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it is something good.
Armor cannot be forged by simply being pushed together. It has to be hardened.
This is why the metaphorical use in the Bible is never really about, is never fluffy when it comes to change.
Yeah.
There's always about armor being forged. Iron sharpens iron.
Yep.
Those aren't pleasant things, yeah. You know, at the offset. If you think about a file rubbing over your arm,
yeah,
that does not feel good. Taking away your material, your skin off your arm. But if that's how you change to be more like Christ, then it's welcome.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. Like we said before, it's not just that evil has an outcome that is good, that God uses for good, that he constantly overcomes the evil into good, but that he bore the ultimate evil on his own. He got up on a cross. He bore all that for us. That was his solution for evil forever. He did that. He took full responsibility. He displayed his full wrath, his full encompassing righteousness on that cross, and then rose again 3 days later to say, hey, I defeated death. My ascension reveals, it just reveals everything. So, you know, I always, and I, one more thing too about this is like, I look at Job, because I think whenever somebody says, well, they always, you know, why evil and all this stuff, Job 38-41, I want everybody to read through that. Job 38-41. God really lays into Job about, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Where were you when the foundations of the earth were laid?
That is probably, in my opinion, one of the top three most powerful scriptures you can read. Because it's basically saying, who do you and your ego think you are?
That's where this whole argument comes from.
Yeah.
Job did it, but God put him in his place real quick. 38-41 is a constant barrage of, do you know, when did you command the morning? You know, do you know when the mountain goats are going to give birth? Do you know the hawk flying in the air? I mean, it's just wham, wham, wham all through this to just illustrate, you don't know anything, dude.
Yeah. You have no perspective.
No, your perspective is finite and it's small.
Yeah.
My perspective is infinite in any dimension you can think of. And that's really what we got to say. Why does evil happen to good people? Man, for all kinds of reasons, but in the end, it'll serve a good purpose.
Yeah. In the end, it'll take you, if you suffer it, you'll become stronger from it, and it'll take you to a place most times where you didn't even believe you could go.
And hopefully that leads you to the cross.
Yeah.
Where the ultimate example of redemption, of restoration, of rescue is right there.
That's where all your power lies, man.
Yeah. Why does bad things happen to good people? Good things happen to evil people? Because he's righteous.
Because it's his plan.
And because we have, if there's anybody who has a right, anyone who has a right, who is sovereign, who is ultimately in control and responsible for everything, he does. He's the only one who can command all anything. He is it. And he does it, all things, for the good. We may not be able to see it. Matter of fact, our whole lifetime, we may miss it our whole lifetime. We may not even see it ever. But lo and behold, it'll serve a good purpose. That's what he does.
Every day.
There was an old movie from, and I can't remember, but it had all these stories of tragedies and stuff from people and how they ended up. And all of them were talking about how it radically changed their lives and they're better now than they were. Even like accidents where they were paralyzed and all kinds of things. But it's like all these, it's incredible stories. I have to try to find that, but yeah. Look, folks, it's a lame argument.
It is.
And it doesn't.
It's got no heart.
Evil does not suggest there is God. Evil suggests there is God. Not only just a God, but the God of the Bible.
Yep. Well, folks, this is a good one. But I'd like to leave you with a little something. What happened yesterday in Georgia hit home for me for a single reason. I have a 13-year-old boy who was about to be 14. So I would like anybody who's listening, I would like to encourage you to do a temperature check with your kids daily if you can. There is a world outside of your door and away from you that your kids face every day, and it is far worse than any world that we faced when we were young. There is far more exposure to aberrant influences. But most of all, I would encourage you to do this. If you check in with your child and your child tells you something that would even hint at them having a mental health or emotional issue, don't do what a friend would do. Do what a parent would do. If you're doing what a parent would do, you're going to find your kid help. You're going to take time to get them right and get them what they need. If you're trying to be their friend, you're going to tell them that their feelings are valid and blah, blah, freaking blah. And I'm so tired of this. I want to be my kid's friend. Then you shouldn't have had kids. You should have joined the American Legion because you can make friends there, right? This is
a softball league.
Yeah. Join a softball league. Go to a local YMCA, whatever you want to do, but be a parent to your kids. Be honest with them. Be forthright with them and lead with the thought that you need to help them heal, not tell them it's okay to deal. That is our job as parents, is to not only guide and grow our kids, but it's to help them heal when things in the world break their hearts and invade their minds and break their spirits. It's up to us to heal and help rebuild them. That's part of our role as godly parents, is to heal, rebuild, and help our children understand and get better and stronger. Iron sharpens iron. That's not just between two people. That can be between your kids, your wife, because we're all under God's purview. None of us can escape it. You might deny it, and you might try to fill that God-shaped hole with all kinds of other things, but it will never be full if it's not full with God. So temperature check with your kids and be a parent. Above and beyond all things, be a parent, because being their friend is only going to perpetuate their problem. And that's not to say that you mean and you're not friendly with your kids. I'm friendly with my kids, but I'm not their friend because it's not my responsibility. My responsibility is to be their father.
What would you suggest for those? And this is coming from a place of reality here. There's a lot of parents who are struggling to be parents. So what would you suggest for those parents? And I'll start you off here. Be real, for one.
Yeah.
Recognize that you're doing something and you need help with this parenting thing. That's the number one thing I'm going to say. What else would you probably suggest there, Brian?
Number two, find a good church and seek the counsel of a godly individual to help you or along that road. What's that?
Or many individuals.
Yeah, you know, there's... The worst thing that we can do when there's a break in our kids' lives is to turn to society, because society is going to tell you all kinds of ridiculous things and all kinds of, you know, Dr. Spock and all that garbage. Turn to morally centered people who want to help you find a morally centered way to raise your kids.
I'll even go higher than that. Even if you're not a Christian, but you're curious about this whole Jesus thing, you're struggling being a parent. Because look, I'll admit it. It's hard.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing I've ever. It's the most rewarding thing I've ever done.
But it's hard.
But it's the hardest thing.
And I've if ever you're done. Struggling with that, look, the same advice goes. Find a church, though.
Yeah.
And look, if you don't know how to find a church, reach out to the channel. You can either comment, send us a message on our channel. Oh, I'll be happy to help you search for. There are lots of resources to do so. Yeah. And none of the if you are a Christian though, and you just want something, hell, if you look, we are Christian brothers here. You want prayer? You got something for us to pray for you about? Me and Brian would be glad to do so. I will
pray for you.
We have a list we carry ourselves that we do in our prayer life that we do all the time.
Yeah.
Happy to do so. Happy to help you find a church. Happy to give you some kind of whatever. But now,
to connect you to somebody who would be great to talk to, right?
So I mean, look, I'm just saying, don't just assume you have to be alone in this journey you're on. If you're struggling with being a parent, you don't know what's going on. You're having trouble with your kids, whatever the case may be. Don't bear that on by yourself.
God's family is everyone. So just like Reggie and I are brothers in Christ, you are our brothers and sisters in Christ. We are here to help you, right? I'm never going to look at a person who comes to me for help and say, yeah, I don't know what to do for you. We'll find some place for you to find what you need. If we can't give it to you, we'll find the person who can.
But we'll do our best.
We'll do the best we can. Yeah.
You know, we're not out for ourselves. That's the whole thing. We're not egomaniacs.
No.
I mean, I have a problem with ego, but I try not to be an arrogant bastard a lot of times, but you know, hey, here I am.
Meh.
But just reach out. That's the whole thing.
That's the first step. That's actually the first step.
Just
reach out and say, hey, I'm struggling with this. Is there anything you can suggest? We will work as hard as we have to try to help you.
You've got questions about this whole thing about Christ and gospel, that your explanation of why evil exists sounds lame. How do you answer this? Send us a message. Yeah. Put in a comment.
Throw us a question. Any question.
I'm happy to try to tackle whatever I can. I will fully admit I don't know everything.
Yeah. No, I don't. Neither of us do.
No, but there's a lot of people who I've encountered who I know.
A lot of authors, a lot of books.
Well,
a lot of
you mean resources. I just went through Liberty. I'm you know, they got professors there that are happy to answer questions and stuff. I mean, look, just let me know. Yeah. So, we're R&B Talks.
Subscribe, like, all them things, guys. Thank you for watching. I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See you guys.
Bye bye.